Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Ellen McGrath Smith. Ellen McGrath Smith teaches at the University of Pittsburgh and in the Carlow University Mad Women in the Attic program. Her work has been published in numerous journals, including the American Poetry Review and the Los Angeles Review, and her second chapbook, entitled Scatter, Feed, was published in 2014 by the Seven Kitchens Press. Hi, Ellen. How you doing?
Hi, Jan. It's good to be here again. It's
yeah.
been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while, and you've gotten a new chapbook. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to read poems from your new chapbook. I'm going to say the name again, Scatter Feed, in case people are looking for it. They can buy it online at sevenkitchenspress.com. So go ahead.
Okay, I'll start with the poem that opens the book. The title is the first line, and it's a poem that came out of one of those wild March nights when the wind is howling outside, but I'm safe inside on the computer, having that particular experience and thinking about what that experience, how weird that experience is, really. Because the wind seems more and more like the wails of guilty conscience or a child's recriminations for its thrownness in the world, I stay inside. Because it's a freight train slamming the neighbors apart, we all stay inside, where fiber optics whisper consistently, while telephone lines fling like jump ropes, blossoming, tightening, hearts in the air, citing memorized songs. In here, the hearts burrow and tunnel through binary sinuses, blind snouts are pointing. Somewhere in Greece, a man is so lonely, he photographs roses and sends them to what he imagines a woman must be. The wind peels the prayer banners off of the trunks of the trees that withstand what we will not withstand. Someone walks in her sleep in Australia. Her teeth are the clatter of keyboards. We don't need to sleep anymore to have dreams. I am watering roses in Crete while my continent's battered by some old Atlantic resentment. The wind is a woman who will not stay quiet, a man who just will not stay put. Inside, the screens watch us. They hope we will teach them our natures. The wind is an echo of love we can't hear, staring into these clean pools of light. The next poem, Sometimes Standing Still, came from a lot of sound exercises I was doing, but I was also working on a project dealing with yoga postures. And I thought, well, aside from all the different asanas there are in my yoga practice, isn't yoga about being able to stand still, being able to sit with things? And so I worked on this poem. Sometimes standing still is anaphora. Standing still, one sees the clouds are moving, and the cliff is just an underbite, shoveling water to sky into water, and then standing still is a misty religion, wishes and birds on the statues alight. Sometimes standing still is a mountain, one of the earth's many goosebumps, straight up like a meerkat or hairs on a forearm. We stand till the wind or exhaust beats us down. Standing still is anathema inside the city stripped clean of its gold, where finding a living means making the right moves, people on platforms so full of the prospect of transit, they're swallowed in clattering wings. Love amasses in stasis, content with its form, despite trinkets and satellites blinking. The moon, the Earth's spinster great aunt, atomizes affection in outdated perfumes of light. You are part of me, all of me, valley or something that lives on the sad side, a bridge I can't cross. Some days, love puts a uniform on, goes to work, or to whom it may concern in a dull yellow envelope. I say I'm seeking out its face in the long time card queue, but only trace my old excrescences looking for you. If you'd only stand still, you could own the left margin and start every sentence, could push your cart through the fluorescent waxed aisles and be plowing a medieval field at the same time, the sun's path pulling you as you push, a balancing that makes it seem you're always only where you are. And when crushing fatigue creeps over the estate, we could trade the mask of vex for beatific, where the margin finally crowns and is the center. First Communion. Every tongue awaits the body. Every body is a word. Every word a possibility. Grant the open wound its correspondence to some mystery unshrouded. Give the heart its place within the grape dark midnight sky. Skull full of sparkling water. Joy like a fly trapped in honey, where its wings were, a chronic neuralgia. Each head that crowns each roseate petal says it again. Then the jagged cry that means it's alive. Whole hungry centuries, eyes of intelligence opened and closed. Lambs in the meadow each spring, the tottering legs of original love.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Ellen McGrath Smith. She's reading from her new chapbook, Scatter Feed. It was funny because before you talked about the sound exercises, I was thinking about sound because there's so much in your poems, you know, so much sound. And I was wanting to ask you if some of your poems come from a love of sound or if that's a big reason that you write.
I think that one of the biggest frustrations in my life, one of the biggest regrets, is that I've had no musical training. And there are musicians apparently in my family tree. I think I had a great grandfather who played in the big bands during the Depression. I didn't know him. And when I went to school, we didn't really have musical instruments. We sang a lot in music class, but we never got to learn instruments. It was always something I really wanted to do. That wasn't foremost in my mind when I started writing poetry. I think the first 15, 20 years of writing, it was really about getting experiences down, working things out. And I think the further on I got in writing poetry, the more I thought, I can make sound within lines of poetry. I can play with arc of sound, and I can sort of make up for the fact that I don't play an instrument. Although I do want to learn guitar, I really do, and I might take lessons this summer.
Yeah, I think you should, but I really like that you said the first 15 or 20 years of my writing, and I'm hoping people out there are listening to that because, you know, you've been writing a long time and working really hard, and your work is so strong, and people need to know how much it takes, you know, to get to these poems, you know.
Yeah. You have to stay healthy. You have to take care of yourself.
That's right.
Go for the long game.
Just take yoga classes and while you're writing. Okay, can you read some more?
Sure. The next poem I'm going to read is called Aubade Noire. And an aubade is kind of a French morning song. Usually lovers who are separating in the morning think of Romeo and Juliet and how hard it is to separate in the morning. Well, in this particular poem, it was 4 a.m. and I had to stay up because I had to pick up my daughter from some kind of school trip. And I was on the front porch with a notebook. And I'd been reading Anne Carson's autobiography of Red, I think that was on my mind. And these cats across the street were just really going through struggles and mating and passion and all this stuff while I'm just trying to keep my eyes open. So here it is. Aubade Noire. It's 4 a.m. In cat world, the shadows won't stay with their shapes, though the air is as still as the drapes in the old widow's cavernous house. The shadows won't stay with the scrapes of the cello inside the tall bushes. Persistent, a warning, cold-blooded, stand back. June rubs its wet thighs on cat world, a blossomy syrup so strong it caves in a human's round heart, trimmed to fit bowls of cream, which are all but forgotten in cat world this morning, with the keys, cushions, things of domestic desire. If the cats are our animal souls sent to wander, I'm afraid they'll be lost in the ivy they've marked. Stand back, cello answers the high mewlings of love, and the high tone relocates like pain. The next poem, I was thinking about a young woman that I knew who was really struggling emotionally and was in recovery from addiction and not able to sleep, but also dependent on methadone. And I just imagined her on one of these sleepy nights out in the country. A local Joan of Arc, stunned by sinlessness, walks a country road past midnight. Voices say God set the curtains on fire that she might go forth, pull the animals out of the brush on both sides of the road, and raise armies of them, a possum, raccoon, groundhog, all the smaller ones fed to the fierce tires, the mean grills of pickup trucks, boys whose veins throb with whatever they're using tonight. Not far now, the walls of the city, lit up perpetual 24/7, the fortress, the place for reclaiming, for cigarettes, centuries of gas pumps, sweet and sour relics, warm, unblinking urns. The animals move in her pockets, her armor. She's never known man. If she has, she stood off from their pumping and dogged but brief ruminations. For there is a king that she needs to restore. Some have called him her father, but that is impossible. That man's in jail. But the man who put the needle in her arm that first night, he spoke of his plan for a peaceable kingdom. By dawn, she is waiting with just a few others for the sun-colored juice that tames the small animals, noblest cause there can be. So I've been working in on a whole series of poems. I have a book-length manuscript that I'm shopping around for, like, forever on yoga and addiction. And this, so there are a few of those poems sprinkled in this chapbook. And this one's called Warrior Two, or Always Be Kind, for Everyone You Meet is Fighting a Great Battle. It's got a couple of borrowed lines that I just work into the poem. One is from Leonardo da Vinci's sketchbooks and journals. And there's a reference to Philo of Alexandria, which in the internet world, people toss around this quote, always be kind for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And they attribute it to him, but that attribution is kind of uncertain. So there's a reference to that too. Warrior two, or always be kind for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And I should say, too, that Warrior Two is a yoga posture. Stand up, drop fruit, wait for the seeds to make love to their allotment of ground. As they rise, feel their pull from every side. Forget you once had angles. Let your head engulf the rest of you. I draw the arm from eight points of view, of which three are from the outside, three are from the inside, one is from behind, and one is from in front. If your arms extend into a spear, diameter of some great sphere inside which lives a warrior, you will become disarmed, your gonads and guts inside a cup that's tipped just slightly up. Ages pass, and then some bodybuilder dusts off old Da Vinci sketches, dreams a slow rotation of the torso inside a cappella space, and builds a website. Every angle is a curve if you can push it to its end and then a little more. Nothing will break inside this space. Your gaze, a gift you carry, just in case you're empty-handed. Something good to give a neutral spot above your fingertips. No strings attached. No charcoal size of who owes whom or why it might be like this. Retire the story of the Amazons hacking off one breast. Hesitate to break the trance and consciously embrace the Philo quote. It's a beautiful notion, though the attribution doesn't have legs. The important thing is to make the move from spear to sphere as quietly as possible. This next one I'll read, The Rain Mainly Falls. There's not much I can say about this. It's a little experimental. There are little interruptions as I write, kind of self-questioning of concepts and word choices. The rain mainly falls. Against the red brick wall, the fading grapevines have a grammar of their own, half-born purple punctuation, frayed syntactic coughs. Manifesting, does that mean? Our needs enliven empty form. Last night, the yellow echo chamber, moon to moon, confirmed belief that all we ever have remaining is one day, if we were honest with ourselves. In less than 2 hours, roiling in the swamps of their own glands, the people in the room morphed into every living creature, then, in human form again, rolled from the shells of their own corpses into fetal balls, plugged into lotus leaves like batteries, stood, considered mountains, and went home. Intimacy. Does that mean? We share the same skull cave at times, but scrawl on separate sides of it. My tall and charcoal declarations, your small pips spelling out hit, no hit. The steps beyond the lips of this thick urn are merely man domesticating wolf again, the wolf in the form of a cotton ball, the wolf in the form of a roan Irish skein unraveling in all directions but the leash. Empiricism. Put this to the test and it will sure enough dissolve. And yet, I can't imagine anything more real than your abrasive hand upon my breast. So many insects come equipped with armor that we figure as the smart ones when the light throws up our shadows on the wall. Projection, God, the father who forgets your middle name, the mother who, right after parturition, sets the bundle gently on the curb and goes about her business. When we part the curtains of our labial security, the mastodons collecting garbage roar. The morning is the very essence of denial, always has been. For however raucous was the thing that came before, it's presto, gone. Carve it into wall or skin, or float it onto fiber.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Ellen McGrath Smith. She's reading from her new chapbook entitled Scatter Feed. And I keep trying to resist this, but it keeps coming up. You know, I keep thinking about love when you're reading, because it just seems to me that your book is full of it, you know, full of love everywhere, like, you know, different kinds of love, but love for the world, love for, the woman addict, that poem that you read about, everything that's seen around the speaker, you know. And there's a certain warmth in your book coupled with mouthfuls of language. It's really quite amazing. So can you talk a little bit about whether that's really happening?
Yeah. I mean, it only occurred to me after the book was published that it's a book about love. And that was kind of neat, because I didn't think I'd ever be able to do that in a way that that wasn't sappy. I imagine if I had tried to write a book about love, it would have been terrible. And I like the idea that it was there, and it was something that was what I was working on in my life, and so it showed up in the poetry, and that's wonderful that happened.
Yeah.
because I think that, you know, I've written a lot of kind of aggressive poetry, a lot of ambivalent poetry. And like I said, it does feel good at this point in my life to be able to, I hate to say this, manifest that a little bit in my writing. I told myself I'd never use that word as a verb, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean, things keep happening that we never think we're going to do. But I kept writing love. I'm like, why am I writing love now? And, I feel a little better now because I thought I was off. But, that makes sense. And going to what you were just saying, I mean, I think certainly aggressive poems can be love poems. And, you know, I mean, very depressing poems can be love poems. And there's certainly a range of poem in this collection. But that love just keeps coming up in such a great, almost surprising way, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, if you try to sit down and write a love, if anyone's tried to sit down and write a book about love, oh my, forget it, yeah. But this is really working. Oh, I wanted to also mention that you have a reading coming up on the 28th. Can you mention what that is?
Yeah, I'll be reading with a group of writers who have been featured in Upagus, which is a wonderful local online journal. That Ziggy Edwards and her son Jude produce. And it's the second reading. It's Saturday, the 28th, at Classic Lines Bookstore, a new bookstore in Squirrel Hill, in the evening. And so I'm looking forward to that. I'll probably read some new work and some of the work that's been in Upagus, but hopefully I'll have some of these books on hand too.
Great. So that's Saturday, February 28th.
Yes, thanks.
So that's coming up. Great. Okay, we have time for some more poems.
Okay. I had mentioned the yoga project, and what I was trying to do initially in the yoga project was write about a yoga asana, a yoga posture, and then write a companion poem about an alcoholic beverage, because I'm a recovering alcoholic, and that was what that project was meant to kind of explore. So I have companion poems here for Child's Pose, which is a wonderful little yoga pose, because when you're tired, you just sort of put your forehead on the floor and kneel down like a kid who has just been given time out. And I decided that Child's Pose was a lot like stout, which I really miss drinking. Stout is good, right? But I was also thinking about people that I know who struggle with alcoholism when I wrote this poem. Child's Pose, Stout. As in it hits the spot in which you live, i.e. you live where you are present. When you aren't inside the brown glass beating sweet and bitter of the day condensed, where are you? Forgiven by the skin when caked in mud. A pilgrim's progress free pass from the straight and narrow, hops and hops and hops and hopes like hockey pucks on ice. Wholesome, good for the eyelashes, fiber for nursing women, stout as stein and squat as box hedges separating greener grass from just the plain, which has to mean the world is just a bee in your bonnet, a valley of tears and a dry, powdery dross. As in, I spot you, leopard, 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 takes to know. As in, if you would rather sit inside that mulchy barrel all night long than be with me, I understand. I wish to God that I could join you, caked in mud and full of hops. I wish to God that I could join you. And this is the companion poem that is about the posture itself. And I got a lot of inspiration for this poem by a talk that Toy Derricotte was giving at the AWP convention about 9 years ago, just about, I guess, how poets respond to abuse later in life. Child's Pose. A way of hitting back. One wave is the dreaded belt, sailing backward, jerking forward, striking skin. Large tides in which a small soul swims. The child posed as a mouse, stunned into temporary death until the predator forgets. The child posed as a house of cold, ungiving rafters. All alone, the child is architect of hunger. Face in shadow, knees, feet, forehead touch the floor. A small soul's scattered breath and heartbeat echo, sounding out the home inside the house. A way of getting back, the heels exposed, the unprotected soles, bulbs of daffodil in snow. I'm going to read this. This is actually a love poem. This poem is called Pantoum, and this closes the collection. And a pantoum is a Malaysian form that uses repeating lines that goes from 2 to 4 to 1 to 3, from stanza to stanza. And it's great for kind of haunting, obsessive poems. And this is just titled Pantoum. My love has found a way to pull green beans from thin topsoil, velvet Martian fingers. To pull beans from rented yard space, he spreads his fingers. I can feel them in my yard space, breaking clods of dirt. Can feel them taking me to Mars by breaking clods of dirt until my reds all glow. He's taken me so far, I do not know myself until my reds all glow. I don't know what to say. I do not know myself, but walk around all day, not knowing what to say, except there's sun, there's earth to walk upon all day. And I'm stem stretching between sun and earth, night and day. To put down roots in a rootless world, my love has found a way.
It's the poetry of Ellen McGrath Smith. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 WESA.